and welcome to Film macht kritisch, the podcast about the other cinema. Here we are talking about a consciously anti-discriminatory, intersectional, feminist, queer and decolonial cinema and a film culture that challenges the status quo. My name is Jana Anturan and today I have the pleasure of welcoming Lisa Smith here as my guest. Give her a warm welcome, please.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me into your space.
Thank you for coming. Thanks for agreeing to do this podcast with me. I'm really looking forward to this talk, which is a premiere, because it is the first time a Film macht kritisch episode is being recorded in front of an audience as a live event, and it is not in German as usual, but in English. Thank you so much to the Feminist Center Frauenkreise for hosting us here today. Special thanks to Niki Drakos and Madlena Muka, who have done an amazing job organizing and promoting this event. And thank you to the audience for coming. As always, I would like to start by briefly introducing my guest. Lisa Smith is the co-curator of the International Festival of Romani Film Akidikea and the coordinator of AVASIA, the European Romani Filmmakers Network. She founded Patron Films in March 2023, a production company aimed at promoting Romani and traveler identity, language, and culture through the production of documentary and fiction films. The company has a focus on skills and training to improve access to the film industry for Romani and traveler women. An example of this is the project she co-founded called Write Into Culture, a writing initiative aimed to create safe spaces for women to develop their creative voices. Lisa is also currently directing her first feature film, Dragon's Orchard, which I just literally can't wait to see. I'm so curious about it.
Thank you, and thanks for the intro.
Definitely. So you and I met a few years ago when I was working as a manager and co-curator of the industry events of Akedikea. I remember you had just arrived in Berlin. I don't know if you were already planning to stay in Berlin, but you had just arrived in Berlin from the UK. And if I'm right, you were starting to volunteer for Romatrial, which is the organization behind Akedikea Film Festival and initiated and directed by Hamze Bitici. And later you joined the festival as a co-curator. And now you also coordinate the AVASIA network. What is unique about both Akedikea and the AVASIA network? What are the aims of these organizations or the festival and the organization? And what are your roles there? Maybe we can start with that.
Yeah. So I came to Berlin in October 2020. And before that, I was working as a journalist and youth empowerment project worker, I guess. And my mum had died just a couple of years before, and I'd just come out of a 9-year relationship. And I was thinking, right, I need a new direction in my life completely. And I got a call from Hamza who said, hey, there's an opportunity coming up within the festival. Are you interested? And we'd know each other previously because my first short film I made back in, I think, 2017, submitted to the festival, so I knew them. So I packed my bags and I left everything behind me and I moved to Berlin. And the day that I moved, the actual day in the evening, the airport shut down and we went into the second lockdown in Germany. So it was an insane time for me to move to a different country. It was absolutely, now I look back and I think, like, what was going on with me? But I'm glad I did. And yeah, I'm really happy that I made that choice and I managed to stick through it, even though it was really difficult during COVID times when everything was closed down. I only knew two people in the country at that point. And I was spending most of my days just like walking around parks and being in nature because there were no inside spaces you're allowed to be in. And during my time at Akedikea, we've done a lot. I can tell you a little bit about Akedikea, the International Festival of Romani Film. It's the biggest festival of Romani film in the world and has the biggest archive of Romani films. This will be our 8th year that we run a festival. and will take place in Berlin the 21st to the 27th of October. And really, it was designed to be a platform to promote better visibility for Romani filmmakers and their work, but also be there to guide and support filmmakers who weren't from that background but wanted to make ethical stories on these topics. And we saw year by year there was a community that was building. And over the last 8 years, we've screened films from 24 countries and I think over 85 films. So we're really proud of how it's developed. And I'm particularly proud of how it's developed since the last few years that I've been there. And then we decided, because there'd been this network that had been built over time, at that point, there was no network that brought Romani people together on an international level that was focused on knowledge exchange and information sharing, you know, like a community of support. So what we decided to do in 2022 was establish the Avazia Network. And this is on the principles that it is founded on knowledge exchange. It's about sharing resources, information, and it's about trying to raise awareness of the level of anti-gypsyism that exists in the film industry. Because more often than not, it's not even seen as something that's really recognized for what it is, I think. So there were all these kind of forces and ideas behind the establishment of it. And it slowly goes from strength to strength. And part of my role there is to develop relationships with other film festivals, training programmers, providers, and just try to get better access for Romani people into the film industry.
Mm. And at Acadikea, you're co-curating, so you're choosing the films, you're providing the program, and how's that going?
It's going great. So we've just opened our call for films this year, and I'm really excited because every year we get more and more submissions, like from more diverse topics and stories. And in the next few months, we'll sit down and we will like evaluate all the submissions. And I'm genuinely so excited about that. It's my favorite time of the year when we come together and we get to view them all. So yeah, we're in a process now. We've just started to define the concept and discuss what type of panel discussions and performances and musicians. So it's an exciting time.
When you select films, when you watch films and you decide on what to program for Acadikea, what is important there for you? What are you looking for? What wouldn't you program? What's something where you'd be like, no, I'm not going to create that kind of film?
Yeah. The main thing we look at is a central Romani perspective, because so often we see, and increasingly, even on the international film festival circuit, there are more and more films being created about Romani people, but that miss actually that central perspective because there are no Romani people that are members of the key creative team on the project, but they're used as protagonists. And this is a major issue for us. And, you know, sometimes we get film submissions in that are beautifully cinematic. You know, the sound is great, really stunning films. But then you begin to watch it and you realize actually the central perspective is missing. And the gaze of, in most cases, like the white filmmaker is heavily on that. And you can feel it and you can see it. And so this is something that we keep an eye out for. And of course, we prioritize films that are from Romani filmmakers themselves. So this is the main thing, really, the centralizing of perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds really so important. Yeah. And I think there is not enough a discourse and critical look at that.
Yeah, what we did find was in the early days of the festival that we'd have a lot of films submitted that would feature in the first few minutes rubbish dumps, naked children, the killing of animals, you know. So this is something that we say, if this is in the first 3 minutes, then we'll automatically think twice. So
yeah, because it sets the tone.
It sets the complete tone.
It already says, okay, this is the community. It's the intro. It's so impactful, right? It's the first images you get on your mind, and then whatever you're going to watch in the next, 40, 80, 90 minutes, it's going to be impacted by that. Like, the intro is so important, the exposition, like how do you go into a community, right? With that camera, what do you show? What do you select?
Yeah, and something that we try to look for is complex narratives in what I mean with that, where a Romani person is presented as a complex person with a multifaceted personality, you know, with an internet, you know, intersectional perspectives, because more often than not, what we'll see is the character is often used just to support the storyline. So this is something we keep an eye out for. Yeah.
Sounds really good. And I love your program. I love what you're doing there. And I'm so glad you are there. And yeah, it's a very important festival. And I'm happy that it's already in its going to be in its 8th edition this year. You grew up as part of the travelers community in the UK. I'm not sure how many people actually know about your community in the German context, or also in other contexts outside of the UK. Maybe you can tell us about that a bit, about, you know, how you would depict your community, and also how it was for you growing up as part of the travelers community, how it shaped your personality, your political views, your also maybe the way you yourself make films. How has it, what kind of role has it played in your life, or does it still play to be being part of that community?
Yeah, it definitely plays an enormous role in, for example, the feature project that I work on now is heavily influenced by my community and what I see and how we view the world around us. So the community that I'm from, we call ourselves Romani Travellers. I'm originally from Wales, but Romani Travellers are all around the UK. And we are an ethnic minority with a population of about 600,000. But that's unofficially. We think there's a lot more because there's a fear around ascription and collecting data and, you know, ticking the box on census forms because of the historical persecution. But yeah, we've been in the UK for around 600 years. And when we first arrived, we came to the country. At that point, we had darker hair, darker eyes, and darker skin. There was this presumption that we were from Egypt. And at that time, we were a people who came into the country who were completely self-sufficient. So we were a nomadic group of people who were self-sustainable, who would earn a trade traveling from place to place. And it's my theory anyway that we represented a threat to the crown at that time, because if other people decided to take on our lifestyle, there would be complete anarchy perhaps. And so there was threats and there was a mission to control us. And then this control came in the form of a piece of legislation, an act, and it was first conducted by Henry VIII, and it was called the Egyptian Act. And what this said was if an Egyptian was found, they would either face execution or they would need to be deported. And so a lot of the communities went into hiding, or they weren't open about their identity. And that that lack of openness about your identity is still really prevalent in British society today. We almost go undetected. And I guess there is a certain privilege with it being able to be white passing in that. And what's interesting for me is that the only reason why the word gypsy exists in the English language is because the Egyptian act became Egyptian and then gypsy, the word that we know today. So it all stems from this act that tried to either expel us or execute us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're historically also a nomadic community. And over the years, I mean, over 600 years, you've seen barricade of attempts by the state to assimilate and criminalize a nomadic existence. And the most recent one actually was in 2023, where the government introduced the Police Crime and Sentencing Bill. And what they effectively did was criminalize a nomadic existence. So for the very few remaining of us who still practice this nomadic culture, it's going to get tougher and tougher. And for people who have given that up or been assimilated into that, or buying pieces of land to still and try and keep the last remnants of this nomadic existence and the culture, are facing major problems and setbacks as well. Mm. So it's a difficult time for the community. Mm. And generally, for example, Romani women experience the lowest life expectancy in British society, 25 years less than a general population. There's really negative outcomes in terms of access to education and healthcare. So I guess, you know, it's intrinsically linked. I could never separate the work I do. And as a filmmaker, I just could not separate this, because I feel whatever I do will be by default somehow political, I guess. Mm. I don't agree with anybody who says they can separate that, because by very default, you're complicit in one or the other.
Yeah. It's, whatever we do or say is political, right? It's always in there, and what, how we grew up and privileges, marginalization, experiences of racism, sexism, also like in an intersectional perspective. You mentioned the women from your community that they're impacted most in terms of life expectancy, self-care. Yeah, it totally is a part of us and affects what we do. And I'm so grateful for, yeah, you giving us this extensive informations and a look, you know, also the historical background. I'm sure a lot of our listeners right now have learned a lot about your community now, and I appreciate that.
No problem.
So you already mentioned your first feature film, Dragon Orchard, and you told me that you want to shed a light on the discrimination against your community in it. Like, it has to do also with that. That is an aspect in your film. Can you tell us a bit about how you decided to make this film and what it's about? What story are you going to tell in it? I'm sure you cannot tell everything about it, and you shouldn't, because it's still in the making. But yeah, whatever you feel comfortable with sharing about it.
The project's still in development right now. But really, the original idea, it came after my mom passed away in 2016. And we have these spaces of land. The way that we view land is very different, I would say, to many other communities in the UK. Because we have these things called stopping places, action towns, and these are sacred spaces of land to us that have often been within families and communities for hundreds of years. Because historically, we travelled with the seasons, and we do our agricultural work, for example, potato picking, apple picking, hop picking, and we would travel around the countryside. Obviously, there were people also living in cities at that time. There is a special connection to the land in these spaces, but there's not really an acknowledgement of this by wider society. And I was doing a lot of archive research, and I would go to the National Archives, the local archives, and what I discovered was there was such a lack of information in terms of like photography, video, and there was nothing from our perspective. And then it got me thinking, how to create something where no archive exists, but just exists purely in the collective cultural memory of a people. And so this is something that really got me thinking about this. But I mean, it's a very personal film. I'm within that. And it's about a mother-daughter relationship. And it actually goes over three generations where we explore how the political context and situation has impacted families, but through a very singular family experience.
Mm.
Yeah.
How far along are you? Where are you at the moment?
So we're still in development with the project, and I'm still doing a lot of writing and spending a lot of time writing now. But I've found some amazing allies and supportive people in the industry who have really given me some good advice. But with this, I also work on some short films. And at the minute, we just got a commission with BBC Wales. And this is also exploring the stopping places and Romani traveller history and culture, but again, through a very personal story. And in the feature film, I work a lot with video archive. And this is my own family's. My dad literally just loved filming. You know, I mean, in the late 80s, early 90s, he decided to buy a camcorder. And he was one of the first people in my family to do this, you know? And he would just like capture life on the road. For example, we would be living in our caravans on the sides of the road. He'd just be filming it, but he'd be filming the chickens and us like running along. It was never to film it, to observe it. It was just to catch these simple family moments. And so we have this archive. I mean, there were also baptisms where my family were all baptized in the river. Funerals, because we have very specific Romani funeral practices in the UK. And so it's just a multitude. And right now, there's never been a feature documentary that's been created by a Romani traveller in the UK before. So this will be the first time that somebody will be able to tell their experience. And I think how crazy that is that we're in 2023. And as a community yet, we haven't had, I don't know if it's about the opportunity or what it is, but the fact that there's been so much made about us, but not by us, I feel like incredibly insane, let's say.
It is insane, but let us also take a moment to celebrate that you're the first to do that. I mean, how amazing is that and how great is that? I think you can be really, really also proud of yourself and also, you know, be angry at the fact that it hasn't been possible yet. But I also, you know, I see you, I acknowledge you, and I'm sure a lot of people will, and just celebrate that it's happening now. You know, this is really, really, it's big. It's huge.
Thanks.
Thank you for doing this work. Thank you for allowing us to see you.
Yeah, it's doesn't feel like it's a choice sometimes, you know? And I think with especially this documentary, it doesn't feel like a choice. It feels like a story that I have to tell because I have to tell it on behalf of my family, on behalf of the community in some way. Because there is, in mainstream media, no real authentic representation.
Yeah, it's a mission. It's also a responsibility to do that, right? Like you, it came to you, but you could have refused to do it, could have chosen a different path, maybe a safer path, but you're doing this. I think it takes a lot of courage and a lot of creativity and so yeah. Much more to do this. So
yeah, I'm not the one to give myself an easy life.
Yeah,
I love a good struggle.
We love that, right? We're used to that, so we get it. Keep it coming. Yeah. You already said you found some allies and your project is being supported, but maybe in general, what would you say? How has your experience or have your experiences with the film industry been so far? Do you have the impression that independent Romani and traveler voices are being supported? Like if we look at this on a macro level now, like in general, your personal experiences, but also maybe what you heard from colleagues, like how is the industry dealing with people from your communities that want to make films?
Yeah. I mean, if just from my personal perspective, growing up, I always loved film. I always wanted to be involved in this. But there was nobody around me. There was no other woman around me who was a filmmaker from my community at all. And it took me actually to come to Berlin to meet other Romani women who were filmmakers. So we are a growing, but still in comparison to being Europe's largest ethnic minority, very small community of filmmakers. So this is something. Through my own journey, I found a few particular allies who've been able to make me feel welcome and make me feel safe in spaces. And I have to say, like people like Bridget O'Shea especially, because to be in these spaces, I think what's been the most helpful, yeah, is people who are willing to create safe spaces and welcome you into that.
Yeah, because these spaces haven't been designed for historically marginalized groups, right? It's like they're there by their absence or as subjects or objects in film, but not so much as authors and the creators and the ones, the storytellers, right? It's been, I mean, let's face it, the film industry is predominantly white and male and middle class. That's the people that usually make films. So I totally get if you say, well, I need people to make me feel safe and seen. And I totally get that.
Yeah, I think it's a huge beast, it seems. And we're still completely on the margins of that, on the outsides looking in. But slowly we start to infiltrate these spaces, and it's with the support of like particular allies, particular training programs I find useful for my own through my own projects, for example, with the doctoral books at the Berlinale and the Circle, who have started to create these safe spaces for people who are still on the margins. Yeah.
And do you have the impression that it's still like a film has to be palatable for a specific dominant, like mainstream audience, or is it like more welcoming and open also for these marginal perspectives? Like if you come and you're like, no, but this is how I view it, this is how I want to tell my story. Like what are the challenges there? What kind of experiences have you made in that regard in terms of like how you want to tell your story and what kind of audience funders or producers or co-producers imagine and how much space is given to you there?
Yeah. I think because there's such a lack of awareness or knowledge about who Romani travellers are, but yet there's, especially in the UK, a huge mass of like inauthentic representation that's been created about us rather than by us. There's a big disconnect, I think, in people's mindsets about how they perceive our community. So I think there's quite often this default to look for what's most sensationalist about it, to look for what they think is going to sell the most, you know? And I think there's this constant kind of balance that you try to create. But through this, I'm determined to try to stay true to the story that I want to tell. But how I navigate that, I think, can be difficult.
Mm.
Yeah. And also this concept, you know, the reason why I really came into filmmaking was to tell this story, which sounds crazy, but it is, you know, I am not prepared to compromise on the story that I want to tell. Because, you know, something that I found difficult to grasp, and maybe this was obviously my complete naivety at the beginning, and as I get more experience, of course, it's not the case, but essentially you're creating a product that will be sold. And this is the ending. And with this mindset, and with considering still, you know, any filmmaker wants their film to sell and to be successful, but at the same time, to what extent are we willing to compromise on our vision and the story that we really, from our heart, want to say? And so, I mean, I'm at the beginning of this journey. I hope I can gather the right people around me and work with people who are of a similar mindset.
Mm. I think that's so powerful and it's so important. And I know that also for privileged filmmakers, be it documentary or fiction, it is always a struggle to be like, okay, this is my vision, this is how I want to do it. There are commissioning editors, there are the funders, there are the producers, and, you know, many people, especially if you're, you know, early in your career, it can happen to everyone. But then there's this second and third layer of, you know, because of gender, race, community, mm-hmm. oppression that comes on top. So I think for historically marginalized groups in filmmaking, it's even more difficult to maintain that, because then there comes this expectation of the white gaze, the Eurocentric perspective, and like, and then they call it like universal stories. They want universal stories, but what they actually mean is it has to make sense for a predominantly white audience. And I think too, or, you know, non-marginalized audience. And keep having that in mind. It's so powerful to hear that you're, you know, determined to keep going with your vision. It sounds really empowering and powerful at the same time. I think you can be, again, very proud of yourself.
Yeah, thank you.
Before starting to focus on filmmaking, you had from a young age been doing social and activist work. For example, at the Traveler Education Service, Traveler's Times, and the It's Cushy to Rocker project. How did you make the decision to turn away from that and move towards filmmaking? Be like, I want to make films. This is my path.
Yeah. I mean, to give everybody a little bit of context, I was working in charities and NGOs since I was 17. I'm 32 now. and so a long time. And that was working in Romanian Travel Education Services, which meant getting access to schooling for young people from the community and going into schools and resolving like racist incidents with teachers and creating some awareness about the richness and vibrance of Romani traveller and history and culture so young people could see themselves represented and treated fairly, you know? And then on, so a different range of projects. But to be honest, the one of the projects that really set me on my path for also wanting to get more into film was I worked as youth coordinator on filmmaking projects. And there's really high level of mental health in the community. I say mental health, I mean like negative outcomes. And of course, it's the consequences of any marginalized and stigmatized group in society. They are always going to be the ones that suffer the most in terms of mental health in some ways. And so we developed this project called It's Kushti to Rocka. And really, it was because of the high level of suicide in the community. It was a series of five short films that we made, but we made them in partnership with young people. So we talked together about the issues that we wanted to tell. And then we devised the scripts, and then we created them. And it was all a process. This really made me think. And you know, at the time, I was going to so many conferences, and I was invited to speak about a lot of topics and lots of different events for a number of years. And in the end, I was just exhausted by this completely, because you are trying to tell people what to think in a way. Nobody wants to be told what to think or what to do at all. And I realized this approach was wrong. And I also realized for the young, I mean, there's no right or wrong approach, but for me, it was wrong. And I realized with the young people I was working with at the time, they needed something to fill their souls. They needed something that was creative, you know, a reason to be inspired. And so I slowly started to move towards film, because for me, it was about showing, not telling, and also being able to show and leave somebody to come to their own conclusions. And for this, I feel like film is the perfect advocacy tool in that it has so much power on how you can make people feel, or what emotions you can and incite in people. Of course, you can. Some people you will just never touch in that way. But I mean, I think it's something beautiful. And I decided that that's the main reason I wanted to move out of this exhausting position. And then I wanted to tell the stories I wanted to tell as well. And I thought, okay, I'd been working in these NGOs for so long, it's time that maybe I started to work on my own projects, to be honest. Yeah.
Does it feel freeing? Does it feel like liberation for yourself, like self-liberation, to just do what you really want instead of this mindset of, I have to help my community, I have to fight against prejudices,
yeah,
I have to
totally.
Tell people, you know, educate people? And does it have that element for you?
Totally. I mean, totally, because I'm getting to define the agenda now and I'm not constrained by the structures around me. I can say what I want and what I want to do, which is great. But then there is still a sense of some type of lack of, you know, privilege, in a sense of whatever I create is going to be branded as representative of, because there are so few of us in this industry. And so it does come with a certain level of expectation. And I think sometimes maybe I wonder how a white middle-class male operates in these circumstances. Like, please, could I be as free as them to just create and have no expectation or judgment on it, and not for it to be held representative of everyone? And so this is something that I grapple with. And I do believe if I had the confidence of a white middle-class male, I would be dangerous. But unfortunately, I don't.
That's also what Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie talks about when in her TED Talk, the danger of the single story, right? Because there is power hierarchies between different communities and countries in the world, like the dominance of Hollywood and U.S. American culture. There are so many different stories about U.S. Americans, right? Like, there is not this single image and there is not the single story. There are like hundreds of stories, fiction, science fiction, you know, so many characters, the Superman, the Spider-Man, the whatever, you know, fictional characters. And there is not this one story. But then if, you know, with the Romanian travelers community, since there are so few films, then it becomes like, oh, there is this story and that story. And then, of course, all the harmful racist stereotypes, etc. And then there is like this very, very limited pool of images anyway. So I totally get what you're saying. And then it becomes like representative of, but it has so much to do with the resources to also distribute and show the films, right? Also to produce more stories.
Totally. And I kind of feel like it's an identity that's been erased. For example, like Romani people have always existed in the film industry in some capacity, like in the early 1900s, one of the first movies, I think the first Romani film to be made was like 1906. And so we've always been present in this, either working as extras, actors, or the protagonists, of course, on screen. So we're not new to this. And people like Charlie Chaplin, for example, who's got Romani traveller roots, who comes from the Black Patch in Birmingham, not far from where my family lives, you know, we have been there, but we've maybe for some reasons chose to keep ourselves invisible.
You have recently set up your own company, Patron Films, developed as a collective together with some colleagues of yours. First of all, again, congratulations. That's really huge. I'm sure it took a lot of courage and feels exciting to have your own production company, right?
Yeah.
It's like so big. Tell us about your motivation for founding this company and what you're doing, what you're working on.
The motivation really was that there was no Romanian traveler-led production company, especially with a focus on females, that existed in the whole of UK. And we decided, okay, maybe it's about time that we put our collective minds together and started to do something about this, because we have no control over the narrative. We have no control about how we're represented or presented. And this was the reason that we set onto this path, because there is also a huge underrepresentation of us working in the industry, but it's not recognized as a major issue because of the lack of awareness that we're an ethnic group with a language and culture and history. You know, our language is similar, has similar words to Sanskrit. We speak Romani, and we know our origins trace back to India because of the linguistics. But it's not recognized as this. I really feel sometimes like I'm perceived just as a failed social group in society. This is the perception. For example, I mean, I was applying to the BFI Short Film Fund recently, and they don't even have Gypsy or Traveller on their ethnic monitoring, despite us being on the official census. But they have groups that were actually added later after us. And there just seems to be this huge gap of knowledge that we are a people who've been here for a very long time, have stories to tell, are part of the history of the country, but it's not acknowledged as such. So this was one thing. We wanted to define the narratives. We wanted to take control of the representation that we have, but we also wanted to influence institutions, because we are not on the radar. We're not even part of the discussion yet. So we want to create space through conversation to just start to be present and visible in these spaces that up until now we've had no access to.
Mm. Awesome. And what kind of projects are you working on? So we talked about the Dragon's Orchard. What else is there?
One project that I co-founded with one of my friends, Lee Cooper, is the Write Into Culture project. And this really just came out of a Zoom meeting where we were so fed up, again, with how we were being represented, and we were coming into contact with short film scripts that we were sent. And they were full of tropes and stereotypes, and they were written by non-Romani people. And we know there's so much talent out there. There's so many women who are excellent writers, but don't necessarily have the resources or the safe space to be able to develop them more. And so it was a Zoom meeting, and we said, okay, you know what? We have no funding, we've got no resources, and we didn't, but we're going to do this. So we then put an open call out, and we created a structure and syllabus, and then we invited people in. And in the first cohort we had, it was completely oversubscribed. Recently, we had our first online production presentation of the stories, and we had 60 people come. This was online production.
Awesome.
And then we worked towards the Romanian Traveller Women's Anthology. So a lot's moving there. And, you know, there is no deficit of people from the community who want to explore that. They just didn't have the opportunity until this point. But it's not just about that. It's about creating a collective, a space. And, you know, we'll just get together and we'll just chat and we'll have a cup of coffee and we'll talk about the shit that is happening or the good things that are happening. And just to create this network of solidarity so people know, hey, there's people with similar aspirations as me, and they are people who I can talk to for advice or support, or just like to moan or to vent or to share my good news. So it was just about creating space where there was none. And I think really one of the most powerful things that can be created, not any white savior complex, but just the ability to be able to open space in very privileged spaces. And up until now, that seems to be very difficult for people to do.
Mm. That sounds really, really supportive and caring and creative and good in so many ways. I'm so happy you found each other and you're doing this. It sounds really incredible. And you've also just been, but some of you guys have been in Cannes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just literally came back. I just came from the airport to this podcast. Oh, so yeah, I went there with Patchen Films. And we were sponsored by the Jitania Film Commission that's headed by Vicente Rodriguez. And this is going to be a beautiful initiative that's going to be very present and visible in the future, I believe. These guys really want to try and make some impact in the film industry. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great experience to be there and be represented. And I also went to the British Pavilion to say hi. We're here, we exist, and we have stories to tell.
And what did they say? What were responses? Are they surprised or are they welcoming or is it lukewarm? Or?
No, I feel like I should be careful what I'm saying because everybody's going to hate me and I'm not even started yet.
I'm asking too many delicate questions, I see. But they better be open because you guys are the future. You're coming up. So it's their fault if they don't.
No, you know, I think people are becoming much more aware and sensitive to topics that haven't been explored, stories that haven't been told. So I think there's definitely a will.
Some curiosity and
totally,
openness.
Totally, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Also, people maybe are getting bored about seeing again and again all the same stories. The world is so much bigger than just what we've been used to see.
Yeah.
Last but not least, what do you think films made by and about Romani communities need in terms of support, discourse, you know, resources, whatever? Like, what do these films need and what has to change in the film industry and in society at large for a sustainable transformation towards a cinema that you envision?
I think one of the challenges that we've got ahead of us is that we need to define and create a new terminology in the way in which we describe Romani cinema and the way in which we are able to call out anti-gypsyism in like European film and in the European film industry, because now it's not really recognized for what it is. And I feel like there needs to be guidance, there needs to be a way of addressing this where we can hold people accountable. For example, you know, a code of representation, a guide that filmmakers and production companies can turn to when a story that features a Romani protagonist comes to their door. Like, I take a lot of inspiration from the Sami Institute, for example, and they created a document that basically defines on their own terms how they want to be represented and what production companies and places that are making Sami stories should be thinking about and considering before they decide to do it. And I really feel as a community of filmmakers, we need to implement this and come together as a collective to create a working group where we're actually creating this. And I mean, it's only as good as the paper it's printed on, in that it's just a document, but at least it could create some type of visibility. So the next time there is a harmful and damaging film that is being supported on the International Film Festival circuit, we can begin to lobby that and hold people to account for the representation of the community. You know, to be asking the questions, if it is a lead Romani protagonist in a fiction film, is it a Romani actor or actress that's being cast for that? You know, questions around if it's telling a Romani story, are there any key members of the creative team actually from that community? You know, in their research, actually, if members of the community they've spoken to actually said no about a certain part of the production, what was that? And let's explore it and speak about that. Are we actively part of that process in a meaningful way? And up until this point, I would say with a vast majority, we're not. You know, I see a lot of stories where Romani people are used as like the tag on friend, the part of exoticism, or like the additional little bit of extra to bring to the film. Or in cases where there is a lead protagonist, is often missing that central perspective of actually that person, because it's overshadowed by that external gaze through the lens, which is something interesting. But don't get me wrong, I also think there are some excellent films made by non-Romani filmmakers about the community, and that should be celebrated too.
What would be films that you'd be like, hey, these are films that I can recommend wholeheartedly, you know, with and or about the Romanian travelers community? Are there some recommendations you'd like to give to our listeners?
I think things are really going to get interesting now, as more Romanian traveler filmmakers are becoming visible and getting bigger platforms. I think it's going to be really interesting when we see how people are translating what their visual language is. And a really great short film that I watched recently that I really recommend is by a Swedish film director called Alicia Orachi. And this film's called Chavo. He's got another one coming out soon. And this actually tells the story of an LGBT Romani man in Sweden. And just the way in which he visually tells that story and the aesthetics, I love. I really feel like it's an exciting time where we're going to get to explore and enjoy Romani cinema and get to start to, you know, define what that is.
Sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to watch that one. You sent me a poem or piece of spoken word that will eventually, hopefully, become part of a film. And I read it and I had goosebumps and I cried and I loved it so much. So I'd love you to read it as a like bonus, as a gift to our listeners, because I think it's beautiful. Would you do that, or is that something you'd do?
Yeah, sure. It's a bit of a spoiler alert because I was saving it for a short film, but I would love to share it. So yeah, this was a poem that we envisioned to be part of a spoken word film, where we just create a really nice experience for women from the community to be part of that film process. And we're gonna make a film about this, and we're gonna have costumes, and we're gonna just enjoy ourselves in the making of this. But this is the poem, okay. This is for the mothers, granddaughters, aunties and daughters. You can erase us from history, disregard our voices and realities, but the truth is that we persist. I ask myself sometimes how to deconstruct a social construct of myself and view my own reflection through my own eyes rather than the eyes of the oppressor. To see what is beautiful, to see our mannerisms and as alternative ways of being and seeing the world treasures that hold knowledge, rather than something that has to be changed. There is a reason why our women die so much younger, why lack of self-care is so abundant. 600 years of history embedded into this soil, and this now is your final resting place. They'd have us believe that our culture was in decline, but it was only a perception, because we all practice our ways behind closed doors in the eyes of judgment. our ways of being and seeing the world pushed into a mould, only to realise that it was actually never meant to be this way. Being able to look in from the margins, our perspectives are unique. But Mom, you know, I will work to try to keep my accent and be true to me. But how to stay true to myself in a world where I understood the only way to feel safe was to sacrifice my own alignment for the comfortability of others. But what is being true to yourself when you have to be a chameleon, a shapeshifter, call it cold switching, whatever you want, at the end of the day, it's a learnt coping mechanism. So we tried it their way and it's really not working. So we're taking back what is ours and we're nourishing the earth with our existence, our presence, defiance, the fact that we exist, resistance. For the young girls who need to hear this, look in the mirror and believe this, you are worthy.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lisa. Such a joy and beautiful to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's
been lovely to be part of the podcast. And thank you for opening up the space for us to tell what we're doing and what we're working on and how we're trying to do it.
Absolutely. And keep on doing it and keep on rocking. Thank you so much.